I'm your host, Aaron Rittmaster. Welcome to the Man Cave, where joining me tonight to record Diz Dad's podcast number 67 are Adam Dale.
Good evening.
Welcome to the podcast, Adam. David Nicely.
Hi, everybody.
And Ryan Treichler.
Good evening, everybody.
Tonight, we're going to address one of the sort of dilemmas of traveling to Walt Disney World, the driving versus flying debate. But before we get into that too much, I do want to once again thank our podcast sponsor, Fairytale Journeys Travel. Fairytale Journeys is an authorized Disney travel planner and has been a great help to us here at the Diz Dads podcast. They were the sponsor of our recent convention and have been great to work with. Check out their website at fairytalejourneys.com. So guys, this is often the big budget question for a lot of people. Do you fly or do you drive? And some of it is probably based on geography, but you know, that's really not the only consideration. So I think before we get too deep into the conversation, we should kind of give people a little idea of where it is that we're coming from, you know, geographically, and what it would mean to drive versus fly to Walt Disney World. For example, you know, I'm here in the middle of the country in the Kansas City suburbs. So for me, driving to Walt Disney World is roughly 21 hours. The flight is about 2.5 hours. How about you, Ryan?
Well, I'm on the East Coast. So for me, flying takes about a little over an hour and a half if we can get a direct flight. Our biggest issue on that is there's only two direct carriers. And then for driving, we're about 9 hours away from Orlando.
Okay. How about you, David?
We are in Indiana, central Indiana, so we can get direct flights. It's about a two-hour flight. Driving with pit stops with young children takes anywhere from 16 to 17 hours.
Okay, and then how about you, Adam?
We're in East Central Alabama, so we have multiple options for airports, but to drive, it's about an 8-hour drive. Whether we choose Atlanta or Birmingham for an airport, it's roughly an hour and a half flight if we can get direct flights.
Okay. Yeah, and I should mention that we were fairly lucky here in Kansas City. We got usually two direct flights a day on Southwest, and for some bizarre reason, those tend to actually be the cheapest flights, too. I'm not sure why, but we've been very pleased that that's the case lately. Okay, so when you're thinking about the whole question of driving versus flying, it's probably worth kind of running through some of the pros and cons of each option. Ryan, I think you've mentioned before that you tend to most often choose to drive. What are the advantages inherent in driving to Walt Disney World?
For me, there's a lot of control. It enables you to really have the ability to be flexible in your vacation. So you can determine, you know, hey, we want to stay an extra day, and you don't have to change flights. Where if you have flights arranged, it's pretty rigid. The other big thing that I don't really like about flying is another control issue, is you can't really control delays. And I know that you can run into traffic, but for us, you know, you can wind up in pretty bad delays at MCO. I mean, I was looking at the airline or the airport stats, and if you look at them, you know, about 20% of their flights are delayed. So it's not a super huge number, but you've got, you know, greater than a 1 in 10 chance of being on a flight that's not going to get out of there on time.
Yeah, and it does get to be an issue. You know, the later in the day you fly out, and for me, it's one of the hardest parts of choosing to fly, is that we prefer to fly out later in the day because that way we get to spend more of our last day there in Orlando. But the later in the day you fly out, the greater the chances of being on a delayed or canceled flight become. And so it's kind of, you know, playing roulette with the reliability of the air carriers to, you know, get you out on time.
Yep. And and with that, it's really strange. I don't know what it is about me, this idiosyncrasy where I don't mind sitting in a car for several hours, but if I'm sitting in an airport for several hours, it's just much, much worse.
I can see that. So how about you, David? You're farther away, like somewhat like I am. You're not as far as I am here in Kansas City, but you're more than 10 hours. So how do you kind of weigh this out?
Well, we've always looked at it before we had children. It was flying all the time just because I didn't enjoy being in a car. But financially, it just works out that we can drive to Walt Disney World, and we always stop halfway. We don't drive straight through. And even with gas and that hotel, we are about half of what it costs us to fly. One of the other things it does gives us, similar to what Ryan mentioned, some flexibility. We don't always have to stop in the same place. So if we want to stop in Atlanta, if we want to stop in Valdosta or Lake City, Florida, we can do that. And to be honest with you, it gives us some really good quality family time as well. You know, there's really not a whole lot the kids can do but just sit back there and listen to the stories I have to tell them. But it's a chance for us to kind of have some conversations and relax, and, you know, brings back memories of those childhood road trips we took when I was a child.
Nothing like a captive audience, is there?
That's exactly right.
So your kids don't have headphones on, or they're completely in tone with you the whole trip?
No. We do make them watch a few movies occasionally. They just can't watch like 8 consecutive movies. So, you know, a movie, then they have to listen to one of my stories, a movie, listen to one of my stories, so forth.
So you get to break it up. Mine just tuned me out after a while. They're like, Dad, we've done heard that before.
They're not old enough to tell me that yet.
Mine have finally gotten there. They're all in that preteen, early age now, and they're like, Dad, that's enough. We want our little devices now.
Well, so Adam, talk about that a little bit. You know, when you're driving from about 9 hours out, what's the benefit there of choosing to drive? We've heard so far about cost. We've heard about some flexibility in terms of scheduling. What else do you see as a benefit of driving?
Well, for us, it's almost the same amount of time in the car to drive down as it is for us to load up and drive an hour and a half to the airport, deal with things there, then get out once you get to Orlando, then go another 45 minutes to an hour out in traffic and deal with all that. We're almost in the car the same amount of time. Okay. So it's almost becomes a no-brainer for us to just go ahead and drive. My normal work, I commute an hour almost every day each way. You know, what's a few more hours? It's kind of the way we look at it. It's like we can deal with that. And we flew a lot until the 9/11 stuff. We haven't flown much since then. Uh-huh. So now we're a family of 5, and cost gets very prohibitive. For the cost to go down there, we can add another day or 2 days or 3 days to our trip sometimes for what flights are, depending on what specials are going about. And every time we get ready to plan a trip, the wife always goes, well, let's see how much flights are. And then we always look and go, well, flights are this, and it's really not that bad of a drive. We can talk. This last trip, I downloaded a bunch of interviews with Jim Hill podcast stuff, and I made the kids listen to that all the way down there, which was amazing because they were actually very interested in it. They were like, so we'll get to do this and this and this, because they're all into the history of how it all was now.
Sure.
Now they've moved past the it's fun and it's exciting and it's new to, oh, that's why that was built, or that's why this was that way, or that's what used to be here. And they're starting to ask a lot more questions. And
right.
That was an entertaining, 8 hours in the car listening
That kind of gets back a little bit to one of the advantages that David was talking about, that, this whole idea that there's some value in that shared family time. And in this case, that you found a common interest you could share with the kids and build on, that has become now part of your trip. I was just thinking about the options of driving. I gritted my teeth and paid for the flights to fly down for his dad's convention. But, it's gotten to the point where it's upwards of $1,200 for us to fly to Walt Disney World now. And I found a couple of really good calculators. We actually talked about them a bit on the last podcast, give you the ability to kind of compare the cost to drive versus flying. There's one website called costtodrive.com. There's another one, befrugal.com site has a fly or drive calculator. Both of them, I think, are good calculators. One of the things I liked about the one on Be Frugal is that it calculates in wear and tear on the car.
That one also does your CO2 and emission stuff too, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It does. It figures your environmental impact overall. But it looks at the cost to for fuel, the cost for a hotel stay if you're breaking the trip up into pieces. And it really, both of those tools give you sort of real estimates of fuel costs based on your actual route and what the fuel costs are along your route, as opposed to just a broad national average. So it's a useful comparison to what your actual airline tickets are. And, much like Adam was just saying, it looks like we could have driven for just over half of what it cost us to fly. And, that's including paying for hotel stays each direction. So for me, it's getting harder and harder to justify flying. The downside for me to, driving, and I guess it's time to start looking at some of the alternatives. One of the big advantages of flying versus driving is time. For those of you who have a less than 10-hour drive, the time is less of an issue. But, if I'm driving to Walt Disney World, I basically have to add 4 days to my trip because I've got 2 days of travel down and 2 days of travel coming back. And that begins to impact just my overall vacation time availability.
Do those calculators take into account vacation time or, I guess the cost value of your time? Because it seems like in terms of just like strict monetary cost, I think it would be really hard for flying to ever beat out driving unless your airline tickets are ridiculously cheap. But yeah, that vacation time or the cost of, even for somebody like me where it's only 9 hours, I still lose two vacation days or could potentially use up two vacation days for traveling that.
Well, I mean, if it was just my wife and I, if it's just two people, then you do almost break even flying versus driving, at least from here. It's the problem becomes when you're at four people and five people traveling and, driving, the marginal additional cost of each additional person is negligible. But
yeah, that's true. You're talking meals.
Those kids seem to add up.
They do. As soon as they're not a lap child when they're flying anymore, all of a sudden it gets much more expensive.
It's that lap child and crossing the three-year-old eating at the buffet. You got to pay for everything now.
Yeah. So there's definitely a speed advantage in my case, at least for flying. And there's a value to that speed in terms of, my available vacation time overall in the year. I also think that there's a flying advantage that I think we overlook sometimes. And that is, there is a safety advantage. We can totally not TSA related. We could do a whole nother show on security theater, but just purely from a safety standpoint, the chances of a serious accident are much lower in the air than on the highway. Thankfully, I don't think any of us have had a major auto accident on a trip to Walt Disney World. But, I had my first fender bender as we were leaving the Diz Dads convention.
Speaking of that traveling back and forth, how far do you guys live from, the nearest airport? What's your – because for me it's 60 miles to one and it's about 95 to another.
Yeah, it's about a 45-minute drive to the airport for us because we're way out in the southern suburbs. How about you, David? How big a trek is it for you guys to the airport?
I'm a whopping 2 miles.
Oh, okay. So you're next door.
Yeah, it's a solid 15-minute drive for me.
Okay.
Y'all were convenient to the airport then.
Relatively so. Although, obviously, you know, one of the time issues, I don't know if you're following my trip report on DizDads.com, but we came dangerously close to missing our flight to DizDads convention because we got out of the house late, and that was that flexibility issue that Ryan was talking about earlier.
Yep. Don't put off packing tomorrow, which you can do tonight. Seemed to be the moral of your story.
Yeah. So, David, I don't know, are there other advantages that you found to flying besides those, you know, safety and speed issues?
Well, I think one of the things, too, it lowers the burnout. When you're in a car for 12 to 15 hours, you get pretty antsy, and you really want to get there. But it can be exhausting. Through one of our trips driving, we hit some pretty bad weather for most of the way down, so that added a little bit of stress to the drive. Had we flown, I'm not really worried about what's on the road. So I can sit back and relax. And when you're leaving, I have that same 16 to 17 hour drive home. So, you know, knowing that you could get a flight out of Orlando at a decent time and get back home and have some time to decompress, and then maybe use that extra vacation day that I would normally use for driving to just recover from the vacation, that'd be a plus.
Yeah, I mean, I made a note about that. And to me, it's just an issue of less responsibility. You know, I mean, it's possible going to Walt Disney World, once you board that plane, all of the travel is in somebody else's hands. You know, you fly into Orlando, you walk off the plane, you walk to Magical Express, you don't even have to pick up your bags. And I noted Magical Express as one of the advantages of flying. You don't have to mess with your bags. You just go straight to Magical Express. It drives you to your resort. You want to go to a park, you hop on a bus. There's no, you know, worrying, can I have the beer flight at dinner, or are we driving back to the resort too soon after that? You know, no worrying about any of those things. It's a little easier to relax, I think, if you're not worrying about a car.
I would agree. And for someone who has a short attention span like myself, it just flying does cater to my personality. But here in Indianapolis, we miss the days of ATA with really cheap airfare. So that's one of the reasons we haven't went back down that road.
Yeah. So
is flying still an experience for you guys? Like for your kids, is it something where you, you know, where that's part of the trip? I mean, for our kids, when we fly, that is actually being on the airplane. It's not something that they get to do. So that's almost like an additional part of the vacation. Hanging out in the airport, going in the shops, going into the Admiral's Club or wherever, and just enjoying that becomes there's a whole level of excitement just around the flying component.
I think that's become less the case. My kids have both been flying, you know, since they were really little, because, you know, we've got family that's out of town that we've gone to visit, and it is part of the trip, but. So is to them, there are two ways a trip starts, right? A trip either starts with, you know, going to the airport and checking the luggage at the SkyCap stand, or the trip starts when the video player comes down from the ceiling in the car. You know, either of those sort of announces to them that they're on vacation.
Yeah. I mean, for us, I think the kids would much rather be going to the airport. That's just because we don't get to do it. They don't get to do it. I travel all the time for work, so it's less exciting for me.
yeah.
To give them that experience in the car, we kind of do other things. Like on one of the trips, my wife made kind of a map from our house to Orlando with all the different cities on it, so they could kind of stick pins in the ceiling of the van on the way down.
Oh, cool.
As we got to certain cities, it was a really neat idea for them to kind of make the trip pass, and it helped them think about the cities they were going to see as we drove down. So driving actually became a big part of the experience on that trip.
Yeah, let's talk about a little bit of that kind of thing. You know, Adam, you've mentioned that one of the things you do to help pass the time when you're taking those longer drives is you've been introducing your kids to Disney podcasts, always a noble effort. What else do you do to kind of help occupy the time while you're taking a trip? Because to me, that's kind of one of the downsides of the drive is keeping, you know, especially younger kids. I've got a 6-year-old and a 10-year-old, you know, keeping kids, you know, from going stir crazy, for lack of a better way to put it, in the car.
Well, ours, we've always taken long trips. None of our kids have ever flown except for our oldest in some of her infant years. So they don't even understand the concept, really. But in the car, we've always taken long trips and driven, you know, 8 to 10 hours in different places. The greatest sin for their individual entertainment was iTouches and Kindles, because we could put books on there, we could put music on there. I put a couple of movies on there, and everybody has their own thing. And then when it's time for everybody to have their individual time, okay, everybody get your iTouch or your Kindle out and put your headphones on. Daddy's got to chill now. And that works really well because, you know, the devices only hold so much. So if they watch a movie, I put different movies on each person's device and they swap around as the trip goes on if they want to watch something different or want to watch a different show or do something. We've even been known to turn on the hotspot in the car and let them stream Netflix while we're traveling.
Sure.
We do, you know, we play, I try to introduce them to some of the old games. We like to joke with them a lot. And we're like, when we were kids, and I thought I'd never say that.
Yeah. But
we go, when we were kids, you know, we picked out letters off of bumper stickers and cars and license plates and letters off the walls and, you know, stared at each other. We didn't have gadgets and gizmos. So they like to color and draw. On our trips to Disney, I have a couple different times we've bought like the passport or journal.
Right.
And they've played with that, going down and plotted out different things. Or as they've listened to the podcast, they'll take notes and I don't let them plan much before the trip. They do their planning on the way down.
Okay.
So they use that time to plan, I want to do this on this day and I want to do this on that day. Or, hey, Dad, what day are we going to Magic Kingdom? What day are we going to do this? Or where are we going to eat this? And we let them on a little bit of the planning, but then we make them kind of decide how they want to do certain things.
Right.
As the trip is progressing, as they're getting into the trip. And it sort of builds the anticipation.
Sure.
The whole way down there.
Yeah.
One of our things that we do like to do, we've kind of started this as a tradition the last 3 trips down now. We end up hitting the big outlet that's on the front end of Orlando just as you come into town.
Okay.
They always have pins and Vinylmations. And so I let the kids go in there and buy, you know, this last trip they had buy 5 for $10 Vinylmations.
Wow.
It's like, load up, kids.
So go crazy.
I mean, each one of them bought, you know, $20 worth of Vinylmations that they then ripped out of the boxes and took to the parks and traded for what they wanted.
Sure.
And we had a blast going around hunting for the mystery, and they put together little collections, and they look forward to those things that if we flew down, we wouldn't have a car and we couldn't, you know, get off property to go to the outlets or go do some things to pick up, and they bring those back and have those experiences.
Sure.
along with it. We're numbers people and always crunching the numbers to do, okay, what can we do? We were chatting a second ago about the whole kids looking forward to flying. Mine look forward to flying, but then when I tell them, you know, we can stay 3 extra days if we drive down, they're like, you're driving, Dad.
Yeah, that becomes a harder situation, sure.
I mean, it's like our next trip down, we're planning on spending, you know, 14 days.
That's a good trip.
Yeah.
That's a heck of a trip.
We're planning on being gone for a nice long trip, and we looked at flying, and even today somebody tempted me again because they posted the deal and Southwest.
Right, Southwest just went on sale.
They're running some flights. Of course, none of them are around our trip window. But I ran the numbers just to see, and even on the $49 each way, we still come out better to drive.
Wow.
Based on what we're doing.
Right.
I mean, because when you go it's 5 heads, you know, it's $500 to fly. We'd have to rent a car once we got there to do the things that we like to do.
Right.
you know, the expense just keeps adding up. And really for us, it runs us about $300 to drive down there, gas, food. And
yeah. See, it's about twice that, a little more than twice that for me to drive, being farther away and having a longer, you know, 2-day drive. But, yeah, I mean, at that point, it's almost a no-brainer. It's all a hard sell to look at flying. Although, you know, I know, Ryan, sometimes, you know, you're season pass holders, and sometimes you're taking, you know, kind of a quickie weekend trip here or there.
Yeah, we've actually got one of those coming up in 2 weeks now. My wife's running the Princess Half Marathon, and I'm running with her. And this is a trip where we're going to fly down. And I'm disappointed because at the last minute, we had bought non-refundable flights. She was like, you know what? We should just pull the kids out of school on Monday. Can you change the flights?
Oh.
We weren't able to change it. If we had drove, we could have stayed another day. And really, we're actually flying out of a smaller airport that's farther away, so we're not really saving that much time. I was trying to convince her that we should just eat the cost of flying and just drive down and or just get a car there and rent the car and do a one-way rental and drive back on Monday so we have an extra day in the parks.
Right.
But I'm tempted to drive even for weekend trips. My son and I are going to go down in May for Everest, and I, you know, he's 10 years old and he's growing up, and I, you know, look forward to 8 hours in a car just sitting and talking with him. You know, we kind of talked and joked about the games and introducing them to things like that. But we play games like that as we're driving, and I teach him, you know, hey, when I drove down with my parents, this is what we would do. We'd play My Father Owns a Grocery Store. We'd play the alphabet game. And it gives me a chance to talk to him, and he kind of sees the way things have changed. And it's a good time. I found that particularly in a one-on-one scenario like that with him, when we're driving, you're kind of forced to bond and forced to talk, and it gets him to open up about stuff that he wouldn't necessarily sit and talk about if we were just at the table at home.
Well, and David, you've mentioned that, you know, you guys homeschool, and so that road trip becomes really a whole new educational opportunity.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, as we go through each individual state, my daughters like to get the maps at the local rest stops. And we can, you know, talk a little bit about the state, maybe famous people, famous events in history that took place. As we go through Chattanooga, we mentioned sometime we're going to stop at the train museum there. But it also helped us prep a little bit to talk about the countries that are around Epcot. Epcot's one of our favorite parks, so we talked about the different cultures, the different countries, talked about the languages, how to say hello, how to say thank you. So all that time, you know, in the van really allowed us to have that learning opportunity without it feeling like a learning opportunity.
Sure. Well, and those are really the best kind, right? Where the kids, you know, walk away having learned something without having to ever admit they learned something.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's got to be easier to teach geography if they're seeing the states as they go by rather than, you know, just looking at a map. It probably makes things a lot less abstract to have everything be kind of tangible for them.
It is. And the really fun thing is when they talk to other family members, we have a map in a couple places in our house, and they will talk about the drive, and they can almost trace it without there being any roads on their map, the route from 65 over to 24 to 75 down, and they talk about the cities that they went through, and even though those cities aren't on those maps, they have a general idea of where they're at. So it resonates a little bit more seeing it, you know, in person out of a window rather than flying over it.
Well, and they're learning a skill that, well, just frankly, people are forgetting in the days of GPSs and flipping a phone open and getting point directions. They're learning how to read a map. They're learning how to understand where they're at. You know, I've been trying to teach the girls, you know, about maps and how to navigate those kind of things versus flipping open, you know, their GPS on their phone and going from there, because, you know, there is a skill that a generation's not getting in that, you know.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. My 6-year-old, it has developed a much better sense of direction than my 10-year-old, and I never would have figured it. But he has discovered that the rearview mirror in my car has a little compass in it. And so it tells you what direction you're traveling. You know, he's now learned what those abbreviations are for. And I just today noticed in something that he said that he's also figured out how the directions work on a map. Because as we were pulling into the house, you know, when we got home this evening, as we're pulling into the garage, the little compass in my rearview mirror, you know, has the S on it. And he says, we're going south. That means we're going down.
That's cool. Yeah.
That's very observant.
And it took me a second. It's like, what do you mean? We're going up the hill. No, we're going down. Oh. So, yeah, that was kind of fun to see that he'd made that connection. It would be interesting to see how he would handle, you know, the challenge, of course, is spending 21 hours in the car with a child with ADHD.
Yeah, that
would be interesting. Yeah. you might need to have several libraries with you.
Now, they have done, you know, car trips. I think the longest one we've done is about 8 hours. And this summer we'll be conquering a longer one probably, cause we'll be making the drive another several hours north to, go up to my in-laws have a cabin now up in Duluth. So we'll be driving Kansas City to Duluth. So that'll replace as the longest car trip and we'll see how they do, because the more we talk about this, the more tempting driving versus flying is getting to me. I mean, if I can swing the vacation time, you know, it just almost seems a no-brainer given the experience that you guys have had.
Well, see, with us, we used to kind of cut into this. Our trips to Orlando are about the same distance as our trips down to the Gulf Coast when we go down there. It's about an hour difference. But we used to travel either at night or real early in the morning. And when the kids were smaller, we would actually leave the house. You know, I'd get home from work one day and we'd drive from the time I got home at 4 or 5 o'clock until, you know, I was just exhausted. And then the wife would drive for a little while. We'd get somewhere, get to the condo that we were going to, get out, sleep for a little while. They'd go on down to the beach or go out for a little bit, and I'd catch back up with them. And we really didn't have to burn a day. That was when vacation was a lot more tight than it is now.
Right.
And we're actually considering that for this upcoming trip, is leaving out in the evening and just driving on down. Because of the kids' school, we're like, hey, when they get out, it's the last day. It's awards day. When they get out, let's just go.
Yep.
I'm a big fan of the either late night or early morning driving. I think that, you know, that makes it so much easier on the kids. We, a lot of times, will get up. We just did a trip with my sister-in-law and their two kids. So we had 8 of us crammed into the minivan, including a 3-year-old and a 2-year-old. And so we tried to leave before about 4 o'clock in the morning, which was great, because by the time people were up and going at 9, we were more than halfway there.
Sure.
We stopped and had breakfast, and then we could take the rest of the trip a little more leisurely and stop when the kids needed to stop. But we tried to get as much done while the little kids could sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think that the part to me that seems the most daunting is that, you know, the length of the trip amounts to, you know, what would have to be probably back-to-back 12-hour driving days. And
yeah, that's tough.
Yeah, that would be tough. I don't know that I could do that.
Yeah. And my biggest concern is, you know, basically that I'd be wasting the first day of the trip and then wasting the first day we get home because I would be useless.
See, the real solution is to move closer to Disney.
There we go. It only took us 40 minutes to get to the greatest answer or the greatest question.
Move further south.
Yeah, you know, the problem is that if I were to move 10 hours further south, my commute to work would be a real challenge.
They don't let you telecommute as a lawyer?
Not full-time like that. All right, well, I think on that note, you know, you've heard our discussion of flying versus driving. we'd love to hear from you and hear what you have to think about it. Mm-hmm. You can email us at podcast@dizdads.com, visit our blog, dizdads.com, tweet us at dizdadspodcast on Twitter, and participate in the discussions in our forums at boards.dizdads.com. Until next time, I've been Aaron Rittmaster with Adam Dale.
Goodbye, everybody.
David Nicely.
Good night.
And Ryan Dreichler.
Good afternoon or good night.
Brought to you by Fairy Tale Journeys, an authorized Disney travel planner. Let us help you put together your next magical Disney vacation. Find us at fairytalejourneys.com. Let us sweat the details so you don't have to.